evening. This is Dr. Stan here on Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the story behind the story, the news behind the news, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion. That'll determine just what the future will bring. Now, I need to remind you that the views that are expressed here are certainly not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Let me just mention that we're broadcasting this evening on KVOH, 9.975 megahertz out of Simi Valley. And, of course, we're reaching 73 nations. We're simultaneously broadcasting here on KFER, reaching the Monterey Bay area. And we're going to have a little different type of program this evening. Now, you know, ordinarily we have guests, but we do a program on another station on Saturday. We'll go unnamed, but we usually get a fairly good response. But to this program we did last Saturday, I bet we've had 30 calls. I got two calls just yesterday. One from a minister asked if I did seminars, and I said, you know, what length seminar do you want? 1, 3, or 5 days? You know, we'd be glad to come and certainly present the truth about what's going on in our society. So I thought maybe this evening I'd simply go ahead and discuss what we discussed on our Saturday program, and then we'll open the lines here during the last half hour. That's in the Monterey Bay area, 464-8295, but anywhere across America where you can hear the sound of my voice, 1-800-5-TALK-AT-ME. That's 1-800-5-825-5528. So please give us a call. But right now, we want to talk a little bit about today. You know, today, at least in California, is an election day, and most people go to the polls ordinarily to vote for what they really believe is the candidate of their choice. But unfortunately, when it comes to voting for the candidates for the President of the United States, or usually for United States senators, or for the governors of the various sovereign states, and even on occasion for voting for congressmen, people are not voting for the candidate of their choice, but rather for the candidate of someone else's choice. And the average citizen's vote is merely a rubber stamp of approval of the choices made long ago in distant cities by unnamed and sometimes even unknown people. Now, tragically, this pattern of elections has been going on for most of the 20th century. Barry Goldwater, remember Senator Barry Goldwater, in his book With No Apologies on pages, I believe it's 277 to 279, stated that since World War II, other than for the first 7 years of the Eisenhower administration, it hadn't mattered which party was in the White House, be they Republican or Democrat, the same foreign and domestic policies were carried out. Arthur Schlesinger Jr., in his book, 1,000 Days, The Story of the Presidency of John Kennedy, tells us on page 128 that there is really an establishment here in America. It's made up of the financial and legal elements in New York City, and that the front groups for this establishment are the Rockefeller, Ford, and Carnegie Foundations and the Council on Foreign Relations, and that its publicity organs are the New York Times and Foreign Affairs Magazine. Furthermore, Professor Schlesinger revealed that the establishment provides personnel to successive administrations, whether they're Republican or Democrat, and the question, according to Professor Schlesinger, was, who is really working for whom? In other words, these people work in successive Democrat and Republican administrations, but are the people working for the Democrat or Republican administrations, or are the Democrat and Republican administrations working for them? Well, if you go back and you read the book Captains and Kings, written by Taylor Caldwell, it was the latter part of the 1960s, and she laid it out quite clearly. She said, you know, there really is an invisible government that controls the affairs of the United States. If you read Professor Arthur Selwyn Miller's excellent book, The Secret Constitution and the Need for Constitutional Change, Professor Miller lays it out really quite clearly, and he points out that the people who are in political office in the United States don't take their direction from the electorate. They take it from a very small group of men and a few women who really are the power structure in the United States. That's the first secret. The second secret was, we never talk about this. And the third secret was, we have one political party in the United States. It's known as the Republicans and Democrats. Now, that may seem like a sort of a very shocking revelation to you. And I'm not suggesting that you don't vote or that you don't get involved in the political process. The reason these things have come about, the reason that this tragic situation has developed in America, is because the good people haven't known what was going on, and they haven't elected responsible people to Congress. They haven't elected responsible people to the United States Senate. They've simply let somebody else pick the people who would be elected to those key positions. And, of course, the tragedy is that every presidential candidate, going back to the time of Tom Dewey, who ran in 1948, every presidential candidate, whether they be Democrat or Republican, with the exception of Harry Truman and Lyndon Johnson, who got to the presidency through the vice presidency, and both of them were totally under the control of the establishment, and certainly three presidential candidates, Barry Goldwater, Ronald Reagan, and now Robert Dole. Certainly Robert Dole is in the hip pocket of the establishment. Ronald Reagan unfortunately compromised with them after he had a meeting, after he'd accepted the Republican nomination. He had a weekend with Gerald Ford, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, Henry Kissinger, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and he came out of that meeting shaking his head. And when Jerry Falwell and Phyllis Lafley went to see him a few days later after he had accepted George Bush as his running mate, and the story I have from a man who was very close to Jerry Falwell was that Jerry Falwell went into Ronald Reagan and shook a finger at him and said, "Governor, you promised us you wouldn't accept George Bush. You could have had any other candidate. We had lots of good conservatives. You promised us you wouldn't take George Bush as your running mate for the vice presidency." And Ronald Reagan just shook his head and said, "Jerry, you don't understand. I had no choice." And that's really the story of the presidency. Tragically, Ronald Reagan, I think he wanted to do good, but they surrounded him, they controlled him. After the assassination attempt on his life, a lot of his ardor cooled. He had tried to do what was right before that. After the assassination attempt, he backed away, and during the last 2 or 2.5 years of his administration, he was just trying to keep from getting impeached over the Iran-Contra affair, and they were going to do the same thing to him that they set out to do to Richard Nixon. Not that Richard Nixon wasn't part and parcel of this whole movement. It's amazing, after Richard Nixon had run for the governorship of California in 1962, and when he lost, he went before the media and said, "You know, you're not going to have Richard Nixon to kick around anymore." He moved back to Washington, to New York City. He just happened to rent an apartment right next to Nelson Rockefeller, who, along Nelson Rockefeller and his brother, really lead the American establishment, the Council on Foreign Relations. And then Richard Nixon went to work full-time for a Rockefeller-controlled law firm. He never practiced law. He just spent 6 years campaigning for the presidency. Simply another example of what the establishment can do. Now, they created Richard Nixon. He was, of course, supposed to appoint Nelson Rockefeller was the vice president when they got rid of Spiro Agnew, and instead of that, he appointed Gerald Ford, and of course sealed his doom. He was destroyed by the establishment-controlled media, and then resurrected by the establishment-controlled media. They can destroy any man in America, and they can resurrect any man in America. That is the degree of control that exists. Now, if you've read the book, which we often speak of, it's entitled Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, and it's written by Professor Carol Quigley, who was the mentor for Bill Clinton. In fact, when Bill Clinton accepted the Democratic nomination for the presidency of the United States on July 16th, 1992, Bill Clinton said, "You know, when I was a teenager, I heard the summons to citizenship from President John Kennedy, and then as a student at Georgetown University, I heard that call clarified by a professor named Carol Quigley. Well, Professor Quigley, as you've heard us say before, wrote the most incisive history of the whole secret movement which grew into the American establishment, the Council on Foreign Relations. But you have to understand the Council on Foreign Relations is simply a front group for the people who work behind the scenes, and Professor Quigley makes that quite apparent. He even talks how they finance both sides. They finance the communists in America and the anti-communists, the socialists and the conservatives. And they have done this for years. You play both sides against the middle. That way you never give these suckers an even break. But Professor Quigley tells the story of a secret society that set out to take over control of America. And then he talks about these crazy right-wingers who really believe there's a communist conspiracy out there. And then he sort of, I'm sure he was laughing to himself when he wrote this. It's on page 950 of Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in High Time, a book which you must get and which you must read because it's written from the other side, from the point of view of an elitist who wants a ruling aristocracy to take away your freedom. And on page 1201 of his book, he says, we're moving away from freedom. We're moving towards an authoritarian system of government. Now, but it's really not going to be so bad. You can accomplish all sorts of things under an authoritarian system of government. You see, Professor Quigley did not believe in the common man having the intelligence to govern himself. But on page 950 of the book, he says this, and he's talking now about these crazy right-wingers who believe that there's really some sort of a communist conspiracy out there. This myth, like all fables, does in fact have a modicum of truth. There does exist and has existed for a generation an international Anglophile network which operates to some extent in the way that the radical right believes that the communists act. In fact, this network, which we may identify as the Round Table Group, has no aversion to cooperating with the communists or any other group for that matter, and frequently does so. I know of the operation of this network because I've studied it for 20 years and was permitted for 2 years in the early 1960s to examine its papers and secret records. Ladies and gentlemen, that's his word, secret record. Now, I have no aversion to it or most of its aims, and I have for much of my life been close to it and to many of its instruments. I've objected both in the past and recently to a few of its policies, but mostly my disagreement is that they wish to remain unknown, and I believe its role in history is significant enough to be known. And then, of course, he goes into the whole background of this incredible movement, so powerful it's been able to conceal its very existence from the American people up till this time. Now, we could talk about Professor Quigley's whole revelation about Cecil John Rhodes. And, of course, if you read the writings of Professor Quigley, who, as you remember, was Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll find that the Anglophile network of which Professor Quigley speaks is organized in America through the Council on Foreign Relations, which is really a front group, according to Professor Quigley, for the Round Table, which was an outgrowth of the secret society created by Cecil John Rhodes in order to establish what Rhodes desired, and that was a powerful so great that wars will henceforth be impossible and for the betterment of mankind. Now, those are beautiful sentiments. I mean, who would not like to live in a world where there was no war and our government was dedicated to the betterment of mankind? The problem is that these very people who have wanted to do away with war have been creating wars. They created the Boer War. They created the First World War as a war of liberation to change the world. And if you want me to document that, I'll do that some evening for you. If you'd like the places where you can actually get the documentation, it's all there. Now, admittedly, history has been usually rewritten by people who are in the employment of these people, employment of the establishment, but there are enough historians, responsible historians, who've put together enough of the facts that we can definitely document that these men intentionally created the Boer War. They intentionally created the First World War not to make money. This was never their incentive. They already had the wealth of the world. They set out many years ago to gain the great wealth of the world, to use it to further this goal. And of course, once they had a centralized banking system in, which they controlled, then they could create wealth simply by borrowing money against a project that they wanted to create, and they could go ahead and they could buy up the newspapers and the television stations and the radio stations, and that's really what they've done. They've been able to gain control of the media, or the vast majority of the media, and as such, they've been able to control what people hear and what they see, and ultimately what they think. Now, the true purpose of the movement created by Cecil John Rhodes was to form a secret organization which Rhodes felt was to act as a church of the world, a hidden church with a spiritual goal, and that goal was to establish a world government and world socialism under the control of a ruling elite. Now, if you want to know the background to that, I can tell you it comes from something known as the Confession of Faith, which was written by Cecil John Rhodes back in 1877 and appended to his first will, that first will in which he called for the formation of a secret society. Certainly there's a book, you can get it probably at a good university library, called The Vision of Cecil, The Vision of Cecil Rhodes, written by a Rhodes scholar in the class of 1903, Frank Idioletti, and at least the part about the force so great that it henceforth wars will be impossible and for the better of mankind is listed there. He alludes to the Confession of Faith, although he never gives you the entire context of it. But for those of you who are interested, we do have that available through Radio Liberty, and if you call our 800 number, I'll tell you how to get it. It's totally unavailable. I've never seen it printed in any book, but we do have a complete copy of it. Incidentally, our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And now, the whole idea of this world government under the control of a ruling elite was really prophesied some 2,000 years ago. These are the biblical prophecies that are coming to pass, coming in within our time. And of course, you have to understand that the purpose of Cecil Rhodes and his followers up to this very day is to bring the kingdom of heaven to earth without God. That's what it's really all about. And time and again in their writings, and you'll find it in the book Foundations, The Power and Influence, that we have republished. You'll find it listed in the Anglo-American Establishment. You'll find it, incidentally, that's written by Professor Quigley. And then Tragedy and Hope, he mentions this several times. But you can get the Roundtable magazine, which was published by the Roundtable organization from 1910 up until perhaps the mid-1960s. And if you read that, almost in every issue, they will talk about their goal of bringing the kingdom of heaven to earth. That's what it was all about. But no one's ever going to bring the kingdom of heaven to earth other than our Lord. And, of course, we want to work to do away with injustice, and we certainly don't want wars. But the tragedy is, it is not people who create wars. It's government who creates wars. Who created the Boer War? Why, it was the government of England. In fact, the man who was the High Commissioner of the Cape Colony was a man named Lord Alfred Milner, who just happened to be the closest associate of Cecil John Rhodes. And they actually conspired to create the Boer War. There's no question they did it intentionally. But it, you see, from their point of view, it was for good, because it was going to begin to consolidate the British Empire, the first stepping stone along the road to creating this world government and a power so great that wars would henceforth be impossible and for the betterment of mankind. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, and we want to tell our listeners out across America that we do have a number of items which we think that you ought to get. And certainly one of those items is the book written by Professor Carol Quigley entitled Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. According to Professor Quigley, the tragedy was the fact that men would fight such a horrible war as the First World War, with 21 to 22 million deaths and 50 million casualties. By casualties, I mean people who were either killed or severely wounded, and many of them to carry the pain of their wounds throughout the rest of their life. The tragedy was they were manipulated into war by their leaders, and at least as far as the English were concerned, those people who We're manipulating them. Really wanted a war to destroy the old social order. This was how they were going to change the world and bring about this wonderful new utopia. And 50 million casualties later, they had changed Europe forevermore. And of course, that was to bring about the League of Nations. But when the League of Nations failed, they needed an alternative. And of course, and we can talk a little bit more about that if you'd like me to document how I can say that they were fully in support of the Second World War. They actually financed Adolf Hitler. They built up his war machine. And because if you don't have a good enemy, you certainly can't have a war that would once again destroy Europe and create the justification for a world government to form a power so great that wars will henceforth be impossible and for the betterment of mankind. And of course, that was then to be the United Nations following the Second World War. Well, we can document almost everything we've talked about. Cecil Rhodes Secret Society is, of course, described in Frank Idioletti's book, The Vision of Cecil Rhodes. That's comes from the Oxford University Press. It was republished in America as the American Rhodes Scholarships in 1946. And of course, the fact that Cecil Rhodes asked for a secret society in the first five of his seven wills is listed in that book. However, Mr. Idioletti, a member of the Rhodes Trust here in America, insisted that Cecil Rhodes never created a secret society. Well, if you want to know about the secret society, that's beautifully outlined in the Anglo-American Establishment, which tells you the books to read to document the background to what we're talking about, the formation of the secret society. But for the researcher, it's described in a book called The Life or Life in Letters of W.T. Stead. And, of course, it's written by Francis White in the early part of this century, where they actually take from Mr. Stead's diary the fact that the secret society was actually formed in February of 1891 at a place called Marbury House in England. Well, this can all be documented. Of course, everything has been done to prevent this information getting out, because the American people are never to know that there are such things as secret societies or people who really want to change our world. Now, we were talking just a moment ago about Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. It's an amazing book, 1,348 pages, written by Professor Quigley, so accurate that the publisher destroyed the place of the book so it couldn't be circulated. And if that sounds incredible to you and you can't believe it, we have a taped interview with Professor Quigley where he tells how his publisher destroyed the plates to his book so it couldn't be republished, or at least they destroyed the plates to the first half of the book so the book could not be republished. So if you'd like to get the book and you'd like to get the taped interview, which we have available through Radio Liberty, it's very hard to get through ordinary channels, you can call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And you can get Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. You can get the taped interview with Professor Quigley. And if you want to get this special, we have Foundations, Their Power and Influence, another very important book written by the Council for the Rees Committee, which was commissioned by the 83rd Congress to investigate the great tax-exempt foundations. And you remember, that's the Rockefeller Foundation, Carnegie and Ford Foundations, the three organizations, along with the Council on Foreign Relations, which Arthur Schlesinger Jr. Tells us is the American establishment, or at least front groups for the American establishment. And that's on page 128 of Arthur Schlesinger Jr.'s book, A Thousand Days. Now, Walter Isaacson, in his excellent book entitled The Wise Men, the wise men were six leaders of America who shaped our foreign and domestic policy. It just so happens that all of them happen to come from the Council on Foreign Relations, and Mr. Walter Isaacson comes from the Council on Foreign Relations, and he takes that identical quotation from Arthur Schlesinger of the Council on Foreign Relations and uses it in his book. So there is an establishment out there. They just don't want the American people to know, because, you see, when you go to the polls to vote for the candidate for the president, you vote not for your candidate, but for their candidate. We do have a gentleman running at the present time in California who is not under their control. His name is Pat Buchanan. And look what they've done to him.
They've called him a racist. They've called him a reactionary. They've called him an anti-Semite. They've called him an isolationist. They've called him, a populist. They've called him a super patriot. They've demeaned him in every way possible, exactly as they did to Barry Goldwater, who was also not under their control. But Pat Buchanan talks about preserving America. He talks about doing away with the New World Order. He champions Michael New, who would not serve under United Nations command and give up his position as American soldier to take on the accoutrements or whatever you would call it of a United Nations soldier. Because you see, the whole idea really is we are to have a world government. We are to have a world army. We are to have a world court. We are to have a world bank. We are to have committees that will control your property and control your job and control your children's education. We'll control America from the cradle to the grave. Now, another objective of the Rhodes group was to gain control of the wealth of the world. If you read a book entitled The Last Will and Testament of Cecil John Rhodes, it was written by William T. Stead, who had been part of the secret society, and then Rhodes had thrown him out of it because Stead didn't want to go along with the Boer War. He thought it was ridiculous. He thought it was wrong. And so Stead was thrown out of the secret society. So when he wrote about Cecil Rhodes and about that era, he talked about the secret society and Rhodes' dreams of creating a dynasty. And he, as Rhodes said in that book, The Last Will and Testament of Cecil John Rhodes, Cecil John Rhodes was one of the first rulers of the world, a millionaire ruler of the world. He'll not be the last, but he was one of the first ones who realized that with his wealth, he could come to control the world. But in that book, William Stead talks about how Rhodes came to and said, you know, if we're going to accomplish what we need to, we're going to have to gain control of the wealth of the world. Well, when these ideas spread from England to America, they were picked up by people of great wealth, and I'm speaking now of the J.P. Morgan Banking Company and of the Rockefeller Banking Company and the people who led America's great banks. And then, of course, once they had the Federal Reserve System in place, they could create wealth out of nothing. Banks create money and wealth out of nothing. And as long as the American people don't understand that, the system works. When they understand that there's nothing behind your money, there is no inherent value in it other than what it is attributed to it by the Federal Reserve System, then someday the whole house of cards comes down and everything you've worked for your whole life will be destroyed. Just as in Russia, when they called in the old rubles, everybody's savings were wiped out. The same thing happened in socialist Mexico recently when they simply devalued and devalued and devalued the peso. We live in a totally fiat money system. History has told us that there is no incidence in all recorded history where a nation has gone under a fiat money system where that nation has survived. Now, that, of course, was the purpose of the this whole movement was to gain control of the wealth of the world, and they've done a great job of it. Now, if you want to, for instance, and you can check this out if you'd like to, you can write to the director of the Council on Foreign Relations at 58 68th Street in New York City, New York, and ask for the annual report, and they'll send it to you. And in that annual report, you'll find the names of the current members of the front group for Cecil Rhodes' original secret society as it exists in America. And here you find the CEOs, the chief operating agent of every major corporation in America, just about, the people who control the banking interests, the people who control, of course, the media. And we're going to talk about that in just a moment, because another goal of the Rhodes Group and his followers was to gain control of the media. And, of course, having money that they could create out of nothing, it was a very easy thing to begin buying up our corporations, and the corporations would buy up the various newspapers. And we bought up most of the local newspapers, major newspapers in California and throughout the nation. They've done the same thing with ABC, CBS, NBC. They have the newspapers on the right. They have the newspapers on the left. They have the news magazines on the right. They have the news magazines on the left. Go to your local library and get Foreign Affairs magazine and start looking at the ads and who advertises there. Not so much today, but go back into the mid-1960s. You'll find that all of our major corporations advertise. All of the major book publishing houses and book distributors are advertising in that Council on Foreign Relations publication, Foreign Affairs Magazine. When you advertise in the magazine, you subsidize the magazine, and that's what it's all about. A center of power, which today is moving America away from freedom towards socialism and a new world government. Now, it's really fascinating. You remember when Barry Goldwater ran for president back in 1964? A lot of you may be too young to remember that, but he was just viciously attacked by the right. He was viciously attacked by the left. He was viciously attacked by the conservatives. He was viciously attacked by the liberals. Now, these weren't real conservatives, but they were people like so many that today have been cited as being conservative, but they're really not. They're simply playing a game. You remember then when Oliver Stone came out with his movie JFK? Now, I don't personally like Oliver Stone. I think he's into all sorts of bizarre ideas as far as religion, and I think he has an intense hatred of America. I don't. I love this country, and I love the freedom, because this country was the first country that was primarily a Christian nation built upon Christian concepts, where our freedoms came not from government, but from God. But they took our country away from us, and we need to get it back. But when Oliver Stone came out with that movie entitled JFK, which raised some very legitimate points as far as the assassination, I should say the murder of an American president, and suggested that it tied into the Central Intelligence Agency, immediately Oliver Stone was attacked from the right and from the left by the liberals and the conservatives. He was attacked by everybody. And, of course, today we see the same thing happening with Pat Buchanan. We see many people who we assume are conservatives, and yet they're attacking Pat Buchanan. And we see all the liberals attacking Pat Buchanan. And who is standing up? When was the last time you read an article in the newspaper that made Pat Buchanan appear to be a very human individual, a patriot who is trying to save America? And you just don't see articles of that sort. And as you analyze what they've done with Pat Buchanan, you can begin to understand the degree of control that today exists over what the American people think. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you're out there in the listening audience would like to give us a call, our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-800-5-TALK-AT-ME. That's 464-8295 or 1-800-5-TALK-AT-ME, and we invite your calls at this point. And we'll go on from here if we don't hear from you. But I'd like to, if you're out there and you're skeptical and you say, I don't believe what he's saying, you call and you ask me where you can document it, or I'll help you to get the material that you need to find the truth. Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan back here on Radio Liberty, and I just want to mention quickly, if you have not read Foundations, Their Power and Influence, you need to get the book. It has been actively suppressed for almost 40 years. It was written by Vennie Wormser, who was the counsel for the Reese Committee, commissioned by the 83rd Congress to try to find out what the great foundations were really doing. And, of course, what they found that the great foundations were doing was pushing socialism in America and trying to destroy the love which every American should have for his way of life. And I'm paraphrasing the remarks by Congressman B. Carol Reese, written in the preface to this book. And, of course, what they found out is that the great foundations were funding the liberalization, the socialization of the American educational system. They funded John Dewey, his progressive education, which was intent upon dumbing down our students. You wonder why our SAT scores are falling? It's not because there's not enough money. It's not because the education system has accidentally failed. It's because it was intended to fail, because you don't want people who can think, because they're not going to be a good little workers in the new corporate state, corporate socialist state, or fascist, godless state that's coming. That's exactly what they intended when they began funding. John Dewey took over our universities. We published our textbooks. We wrote our encyclopedias, and on and on and on. Foundations, their power and influence is available by simply calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Order Foundations, Their Power and Influence, or order Tragedy and Hope and the interview with Professor Quigley and Foundations. You will get more information there than you'll get in most universities in 4 years of education, or perhaps I should say 4 years of indoctrination. Okay, Dr. Stan, back here once again. Our telephone number, 464-8295, or out there across America, 1-800-5-TALK-AT-ME. And we have Hank on the line. Hi, Hank. How you doing?
Okay, how are you today?
I'm doing just fine, thanks.
Great. You know, I had a question for you about several parts, but first one would be the... Ever heard of the Masons run the world conspiracy?
Sure, and that, of course, is exactly what these other people want you to think. In fact, sure, there are Masons out there, and there were roots of Masonry that were tied into Illuminism back in the 1800s, but the real force that's working behind the scenes is the secret society created by Cecil John Rhodes, and, of course, they keep pushing the Masons out there so that you won't see what the real force is. And there are many books written on this subject that are intentionally designed to confuse the public. In other words, it's the Masonic conspiracy. It's the Jewish conspiracy. It's the Jesuit conspiracy. It's the Mormon conspiracy. You know, there are all these conspiracies that are out there, and they're designed specifically to throw you off the track. Or it's the banking conspiracy. But all of these are simply means of taking you off the track. Now, certainly Masonry has deep ties to the occult. And, of course, what really energizes this whole movement that Cecil Rhodes created is the occult, going along with the Theosophists, which is an offshoot of Masonry and the Rosicrucians and the New Age movement. But it is not the Masonic organization per se that is the force behind what's going on today, but Cecil Rhodes Group, and they have intentionally and purposely put out all these false bits of misinformation and disinformation to throw the unwary off the track.
Right. Okay, and let's see, like the George Bush belonging to the Skull and Bones or whatever?
Yeah, this is simply another sort of an occultic organization that has ties into occult organizations of the past. But the Skull and Bones, although it has many people in it, most of them are in the Council on Foreign Relations. And they're talking about people like Avril Harriman and the fellow who publishes National Review, William Buckley. They all go from Skull and Bones into the Council on Foreign Relations, which is really the key coordinating organization, or at least the people behind it. Now, there are some people in the Council on Foreign Relations who are simply there to be manipulated into going along with the movement. But
like your Sam Donaldson.
Right, sure. Well, basically, Sam is smart enough to know that if he wants to keep his job with his hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, he's not going to talk about this anymore than Dan Rather or John
Brokaw. Yeah, like celebrity lifestyle.
Sure. You know, if you want to lose your job real fast, you get on as Dan Rather and say, there is a secret organization out here that works within the Council on Foreign Relations. Council on Foreign Relations isn't secret. Their meetings are secret. If you go to them, you have to swear you will not repeat anything you've ever heard. All the minutes of their meetings are sequestered for 25 years. You can't go through them. But the real thing is, this is an open conspiracy. In fact, a man named H.G. Wells wrote a book by that title after he had met with the people from the secret society, from Cecil Rhodes Secret Society, and they decided this was going to be what he referred to as an open conspiracy, moving towards their ultimate goal, which was a government almost identical to that existed in Russia.
Okay, so you say that they're energized by occult
forces.
Okay, so it's forces, not necessarily that they practice consciously the occult practices, but that they are energized unconsciously.
Probably many of them are. In other words, many of these people are, they really want to do good. They want to create a better world. They want a world without war. but what energizes them are the occult forces. For instance, one of the major people in America who was created the Council on Foreign Relations, the man who really organized the council, was a man named Edward Mandel House. If you read a book entitled Spiritual Politics, they will tell you Edward Mandel House was deeply involved in Spiritism. The people who surrounded Milner, who was the man who succeeded Cecil Rhodes as part of this movement, was deeply involved in Spiritualism. Many of these people are involved in Spiritualism, astrology, the New Age concepts, just as Nancy Reagan, President Ronald Reagan's wife, was consulting her astrologer every week and then advising the President of the United States on what he should do. We had the occult operating in the White House at that time.
Right. Okay, and then there was the next part would be the, you know, there's a certain overlap I see between, you know, what I call like the left conspiracy, you know, seers, and let's see, along the lines of Noam Chomsky, and even going into like Dave Emery. Are you familiar with him?
I'm really not familiar with him. I am familiar with Chomsky.
Dave Emery actually is right here in you know, the Bay Area, and he's on KAZU. You know, I can't remember the call letters, but you know, it's right there in Pacific Grove, and then
right.
He also does one over in Foothill College, which is right over the hill,
mm-hmm.
And he. He has a show, basically, which is picking up from Mae Brussels. Do you remember her?
Sure, I remember
Mae.
Yeah,
so he's basically the inheritor of her tradition. And, you know, he's run with it ever since he died or whatever. And anyway, so I was just wondering, you know, about your, you know, because I remembered once I heard you say something, you know, that you, about Chomsky in a positive light, that he was on the right track in some regards, although you disagreed with him in others.
Well, what he talks about is the power elite, the establishment.
Uh-huh.
He recognizes the problem, but what's his solution? His solution is socialism. That's like fighting a fire with gasoline. What we need to do is limit the power of government. What we need to do is transform the individual, and we don't do it through government. We do it by the saving grace of Jesus Christ. Only a moral and religious people can be free. If you don't have moral and religious people, then you have to have more and more and more government to control them. You see, that's where he and I would disagree. He wants a simple solution. We'll just give all the power to people like Bill Clinton or, you know, a ruling elite. And, of course, I feel that power, by its very nature, is destructive. We can never entrust to people to have power over the lives of the individual. The reason we're in the trouble we are today is it is because of government that these fabulous fortunes have been created, this fabulous amount of power in the hands of an international banking cartel has been created. If it weren't for government, they could never have accomplished what they have. And of course, these people use government then, and then they finance socialism, and what's the solution what's the socialist solution? More power to government to control these wicked capitalists. And the average individual who is involved doesn't understand it is these very wicked capitalists who are pushing socialism. That's the beauty of that book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, which points out that the great fortunes of Rockefeller, Carnegie, and Ford are being used to push socialism and destroy the very system that gave them birth.
Okay.
Okay, anything else, Hank?
Geez, not tonight, not right now. Good talking with you again.
Oh, good talking to you, Hank, and I hope I've clarified, you know, my feelings on these things, because all of your points are well taken.
Oh, sure, you know, I'm just, curious about, you know, because you have a, you know, constructed, complete view of things, so I, you know, like to find out about, things, except, I was wondering also about, actually, your environmental, views.
Well, I believe the environmental system, is being used, to justify more governmental power. Lawrence Spelman Rockefeller, or Lawrence Rockefeller Foundation, is actually funding a great deal of the environmental movement, and the other foundations are funding the rest of it. Now, many times, the great corporations will intentionally pollute things to justify more government control. Probably the worst pollution we have in America today is at Rocky Flats, and I think it was Hanford, where the government, you know, had their plans for, you know, to create, plutonium enrichment, things of that sort. You mean we can trust the government, cleaning up pollution? Look at what happened in Russia, and when you had total government control, you had the greatest pollution in the world. Clear-cutting of forests is not done by somebody who, in their own forests, you know. If you own the forest, you selectively cut. It isn't the government forest they allow the clear-cutting. And then, of course, that justifies the cry of the environmentalists, we got to have more control to stop these things that are going on. And most environmentalists are really nice people who do not understand that they're being used in this whole thing, because every problem dealing with the environment has a common solution, another series of government laws. And every time you pass a law, you take away a little freedom. And when you pass enough laws, there's no freedom left at all. That's what it's really all about. And, of course, as far as the ozone hole, this is a scam. Why? It's a very convenient scam, because you do away with Freon, you have to bring in Suva, which is going to mean a complete overhaul of the whole refrigeration industry. There is more smuggling today of Freon than there is of cocaine, and you can make more money smuggling Freon into America than you can smuggling cocaine into America?
Oh, does the CIA bring that into?
I don't know about that. No, I don't think they probably do. But you know, there's nothing wrong with Freon. The ozone hole is a fraud. You understand the background of the ozone hole, I'm sure.
Oh, well, from what I know, the mainstream reports, I suppose.
Well, basically, the mainstream reports are lying to you, and we have all sorts of information from top-notch scientists. In fact, when they had the big meeting down in Rio, there was a group of scientists, I think there were 100 scientists, 23 or 24 Nobel laureates who signed a letter. It was called the Heidelberg Appeal, and they said, don't listen to all this environmental claptrap, in essence. They didn't use the word claptrap, but, you know, it's just not true. It's being used to frighten the people. Now, the ozone hole, basically, ozone is a breakdown product of oxygen, and you get it when sunlight or ultraviolet hits the oxygen right. molecule and it breaks down. So the ozone hole occurs over the South Pole at the time of year when there is no sunlight hitting the South Pole. And so there is no oxygen breaking down into ozone. When the sun hits the South Pole, the hole closes. But they had to have a justification to do away with Freon. And so they created this whole thing. You know, when Bill Clinton first came into office, somebody in the EPA said that we ought to do a study to really see if there was more ultraviolet light. We ought to set up stations and check out ultraviolet light in the United States and see if this was really a problem with the ozone hole. We were getting too much ultraviolet. And the guy immediately was fired. They didn't want to have a scientific study. They don't want the American people stopping to think about the reality of this greatest fraud of all time. But the ozone depletion scam, which has done away with outlawing Freon, is going to kill people all throughout the world, because it's going to do away with refrigeration in third world countries. They can't afford all sorts of new refrigerators, and you can't use Suva in your old refrigerators. Then you won't be able to have storage of medicines and vaccines and storage of food, which, you know, is an important byproduct of refrigeration, and it's going to result in a disaster. In fact, when you have to get Suva put in your car, do something about the air conditioning in your car, I mean, it's going to cost you a big, big bucks, and it's all for naught. It's all part of a created hysteria. But the Brofmans, who owned Seagram's and also controlled the stock in DuPont for a time, did very well. They've sold out now. But it was all a scam. It, like acid rain, it was a scam. The government spent $500 million studying it, and of course there were some lakes that had problems. But those lakes had problems because the ash washing down from the hillside, not because of the acid rain. And all you had to do was put a little alkali into the lakes, it'd be fine. But they'd been dead lakes for a long, long time. So much of this thing is a scam to be used to justify ever more government control.
Okay, so then can we say then that you're opposed essentially to most all government regulations of economic activity?
Absolutely. The government does not solve our problems. Government is our problem.
Okay, well, let's then could we return to, let's say, Victorian America, where, you know, there's child labor and so forth? You know, laissez-faire?
Of course, no. I believe we need to cut back on the power of government. I believe you need people like Samuel Gompers, who organized the union movement in America.
Oh, okay.
But Samuel Gompers said, look the world over wherever you will, and wherever you see compulsory government benevolence, you will see initiative removed from the hearts of men. And Samuel Gompers, who started the union movement in America, was totally against socialism. Now, the labor union movement in America has been taken over by the socialists, and they're using it as a base for, getting all that money from the laboring men so that they can push a socialist agenda in the United States. And, of course, you have to understand that the current unions in America are working hand in glove with the big corporations. In fact, Wayne Kirkland of the AFL-CIO was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. So the working men are simply being manipulated. What we need, of course, are better people. What we need are moral people. What we need are responsible people, not more government.
Okay, and then also I did have a question about with the current increase in immigration and all the folks coming in from other countries, and they have a different sets of religious beliefs. Now, of course, you know, the country was founded on the premise of freedom of religious practice. Of course, the founding fathers assumed, presumably, that most of the immigration would consist of Christians from Europe, I suppose.
That's right. And those people who wanted to destroy the country did away with the McCarran Immigration Act, and they started bringing in people who had different religions and different worldviews and were dedicated to socialism because they wanted to destroy America. They've done a great job. Hank, we've got one more caller. I'm going to have to let you go. We'll talk it out, or either the next hour or some other time, okay?
Okay, because, I wanted to ask you about the Buddhists and all that.
Okay, why don't you call right into the next hour, okay?
Sure, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye, God bless. Okay, fine. Connor, quick, we're almost out of time. Quick point?
I'll just talk to you when you're on again here in the next hour.
Okay, we'll be on in the next hour.
Goodbye.
Okay, fine. Our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-800-5. Talk at me. We're just about out of time, but I think it's so vitally important that the our listeners to our program understand that what's happening in America is not accidental. Now, the man who, as you heard me talking to Hank, who was instrumental in creating the Council on Foreign Relations in America, was a man known as Colonel Edward Mandel House. And in 1911, Colonel House wrote a book entitled Philip II Administrator, The Story of Tomorrow, which was the story of how a dictatorship was established in America. And in 1925, Colonel House wrote in his diary on March 22, 1925, "I often think of Mussolini and compare him with Philip Drew. There's a parallel in their careers. I wonder whether Mussolini will rise to the heights of self-abnegation that Drew did. I've thought to send Mussolini a copy of Philip Drew, for if he read it, he might see the parallel and it might influence him in some degree." So here's the man who actually created the Council on Foreign Relations, writes a book entitled Philip Drew Administrator, The Story of Tomorrow. And, of course, it is the story of how the dictatorship is established in America. And Colonel House is talking about how he really wanted to send a copy of that to Benito Mussolini, the father of fascism. Now, 8 years later, in 1933, Colonel House wrote in Liberty Magazine, January 7, 1933. "In 1911, I wrote a book entitled Philip Drew Administrator. It was, in fact, a semi-political novel, showing how a dictator seized the government of the United States and anticipated Mussolini by a number of years. There is found considerable sentiment favorable to Mussolini's and his sort of dictatorship in conservative circles in America. The thought is that Congress, with its inefficient methods, would be superseded by more direct action. Italy has such a government now functioning under the able and courageous Mussolini. If we are to have a dictator, our people and institutions of wealth would like him to be of the Mussolini type." Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have to understand that what the people of wealth really want, and they wanted in 33, and they want it today, is a Mussolini type of corporate socialist dictatorship, and that is the direction America is headed, unless the American people become educated, become committed, unless the Christians of this country are willing to take a stand for righteousness. The great tragedy of our time is that so many Christians are simply waiting for the second coming to be whisked away in a cloud, to be raptured out of this world. Believe me, there are a lot of Christians in Hitler's Germany who felt exactly the same way and used their religious beliefs to justify the fact that they did nothing when they were taking the Jews off to concentration camps. They did nothing when the Christians were being arrested. And believe me, if you read Norman Cohn's book, I believe it's called Warrant for Genocide, written from a Jewish perspective, he points out there were not 6 million Jews, but 15 million people executed. Yes, 6 million Jews were killed, but there were an equal number of Christians killed as well. But we never talk about that. Why do you think that is? This is not to deprecate the tragedy of genocide of Jews. It's to say that the occultic forces that energized Adolf Hitler hate Christians as well. And believe me, those same occultic forces are alive and well in Washington, D.C. today. In fact, a generation ago, the people who financed Adolf Hitler, and he never could have accomplished what he did without great help from America, the same forces are here working with the same corporations energized by the same occultic beliefs. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the time is late, but right now I want to remind you that we are dependent upon you to continue bringing you this sort of a message. If you'd like to get a tape, a recording of this program, you can call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you want documentation on anything, you simply write to me. We'll get it for you or tell you where you can find it on your own. If you'd like to help us, and basically we need your help to continue bringing you the message of freedom that you're not going to get elsewhere, why, you can write to us at Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters for a gift of $20 or more a month, we'll send you the four best tapes of the month. Or if you'd like to call our 800 number, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Why, you can put the pledge on your Visa or MasterCard. We don't take American Express, and we're not tax deductible, because we want to be able to tell you the truth that you're not getting from ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and right on down the line, because they all interlock with America's invisible government, the front group for Cecil Rhodes' secret society that dreamed of bringing the kingdom of heaven to earth without God. Well, we want to thank those in the past who have contributed so generously to Radio Liberty. We ask for your continued prayers for our provision and for our protection. And I would close with reminding you of what Abraham Lincoln said. At what point should we expect the approach of danger? By what means should we fortify ourselves against it? Should we expect some transatlantic giant to step the ocean and crush us with a blow? Never. All the armies of Europe and Asia combined could never by force take a drink from the Ohio or make a mark on the Blue Ridge. Then at what point should danger be expected? And my answer, if it ever reaches, it must spring up among us. It can never come from abroad. If destruction be our lot, then we ourselves must be its authors and its finishers. As a nation of free men, we shall live on through all time or die by suicide. Ladies and gentlemen, America is dying by suicide because the good people, the Christians of this country, are not taking a stand for righteousness. It's time we took a stand for righteousness. Reclaim Christian America. Good night. God bless you.